Roundtable Podcasts, underwritten by Proctors, the Capital Region's premier performing arts center featuring the best in entertainment from Broadway and around the globe. Proctors.org.
Back with us is one of our great stars, Richie Neal, the congressman from Massachusetts' 1st District, Democrat in office since 1989, and a man I love to talk to. So, Richie, let's start with ISIS. ISIL is, the new thing is Islamic State, which would be is, or T, which would be thugs. So what do you make of the whole thing?
Well, that's actually a very good description, as you've offered it. I've had a chance to attend briefings with the Joint Chiefs of Staff, and while some of the information is obviously not to be revealed, there are other parts of the conversation that everybody is knowledgeable about, and the indication that ISIS is determined to build a caliphate from Afghanistan to Turkey, based upon anywhere from 15 to 25,000 soldiers. And their brutality is evident for the world to see, and not to miss the point that they are recruiting former druggies in Turkey. It is the Syrian border that people from Turkey are crossing through. You have 100 American citizens who have traveled to this region, and 40 are being monitored when they come back. And not to miss the point, in the United Kingdom, there are 500 individuals who hold British passports who have traveled to fight in the jihad. And I think monitoring these groups is very important, and not to miss the point here that I think addressing the issue of ISIS through surgical airstrikes, similar to what we did in Somalia and similar to what we did in Bosnia during the Clinton years, is important. And I don't think that we should be dismissive or naive about what this threat poses.
Well, you know, I love this idea that we would give the air power, and that either, you know, Iraq or combined Arab forces or whatever would have to do the work. That way we can't both be doing it and then getting blamed for it by the people in those countries.
Well, I think the part of it is that obviously President Obama was elected on the basis of ending the wars in Afghanistan and in Iraq. And now the question is, can one build a alliance that is similar to what Bush Sr. did in removing Hussein from Kuwait? And I think that there's evidence that this is happening. The Australians have committed up to 6,000 soldiers, and you can see that our European allies are also participating. The Saudis have said that we can use Saudi Arabia as a launching point, and that's important. But I also think that one of the problems we've always had in that part of the world is that there are some dual loyalties that these governments embrace. And clearly, that is the case with Qatar. And I think that getting these individuals to understand that ISIS in the long run represents a threat to them as well as to representative democracies in America and Western Europe.
Is ISIS really all that new, or is it part of the, you know, establishment that had been driving war in the region or before?
Well, I think one can make the argument all the way back to Lord Balfour, as the lines were drew in many of these Arab nations, that there has been, since the collapse of the Ottoman Empire, there have been these elements. And that is not to miss the point. And I think that that is something that we all need to be mindful of. I mean, Lawrence of Arabia is the individual who helped bring about the collapse of the Ottoman Empire. And not to miss the point that from there, that there were a lot of recalcitrant forces that have embraced the jihad in different forms over the course of the last century. And so I think that you're correct about the antecedents of some of this movement, but not to miss the point that these beheadings and burying people alive, incidentally, and the kidnapping of women has also been used to intimidate people in Western democracies. And that's what the visuals are about. And I think that the idea that you have a British citizen who is the voice and the actual perpetrator of these horrific crimes is something we need to be mindful of.
What about the policy of no ransom? Is that a good idea or a bad idea?
Well, I mean, I tell you that the Israelis have done it with, I think, success over the course of their ongoing struggle. And I think that it is the right course of action, as difficult as it is for everybody in a representative democracy. I think that the families have made pleas. Governments have used diplomatic efforts behind the scenes to convince them to try to get relatives freed and citizens of other nations freed, but it's not been successful. And I think that in our case here, I just don't think you can submit to ransom, because then there will be whole-scale kidnappings everywhere, and it will be an effort made by jihadists who, incidentally, in my judgment, are not going to be satisfied by anything that Western democracies offer as they attempt to build this caliphate.
What about the other countries that are doing it, Richie?
Well, I mean, I've always been of the opinion that all we can do is offer advice in these instances, and that we are not in a position to direct anybody, and sovereign nations make those sorts of individual decisions.
Let's travel from the Mideast to the Ukraine. What do you make of Putin? Is he crazy, or is he just acting out of self-interest in terms of mobilizing national pride? What do you make of that?
Well, there's an interesting aspect to the Ukrainian-Russian ongoing conflict, and that is obviously that Putin and his very candid moments has indicated that he believed that the collapse of the Soviet Union was a disaster, despite what Gorbachev had undertaken. And once Glasnost had been proposed, you can see that it was the breakup of a Soviet Union that no longer economically could provide for its people. And I think that he has lamented time and again, meaning Putin, the collapse of the old Soviet Union, considered it to be a disaster for Russia. And as you watch many of the breakaway republics join NATO and join kind of the whole notion of Western philosophy, it clearly has alarmed him, missing the point that there was great hope that there was a time when Russia considered joining NATO. And it is now far from there, in the sense that there's been rising nationalism in Russia. And there is a kind of a unique aspect or perspective to this debate and conflict, and that is that the relationship between Russia and Ukraine is ancient. And recently, I've finished Catherine the Great and understood that actually the Russian Orthodox Church was founded in the Ukraine, and that she was the first dictator, in a sense, to seize parts of the Ukraine under nationalist headings. And so I think that that's part of this discussion. But I also think that the response from the Western nations, which obviously is always going to be short of a war, has been to come to the aid of Ukrainians and really to ratchet up sanctions against Russia, which I think are going to, in time, they're going to cause Putin to have a different thought pattern here. But the sanctions that have been proposed, we really need NATO to stand firm on it. You can't have breakaway agreements, and as heavily dependent as some of the our allies in NATO are over natural gas, I think that we need to be very, very careful in making sure that the alliance is not tentative. It really needs to be unyielding and unwavering.
And when will you know whether it's happening or not?
Well, you can see right now that there's evidence that it is happening, and you can see that the response of Putin has been to become even more nationalistic, but I think that could be very different in a year or so when people start to feel the anguish of what this really means.
Some people have compared this with early Hitlerism, that this could get out of hand. Do you believe that?
I don't think it could, but I do think that Putin is an individual who obviously is interested in reviving the whole theory of a greater Russia.
Well, what would you expect from a KGB colonel?
Well, that's part of this. I think that we need to be mindful of that, and that's a part of his DNA, and I think that he has acted like a thug as well as it relates to the Ukrainian people. And I also think that his decision to embrace greater Russia and then to deny it, when the evidence is overwhelming that Russian soldiers and Russian armaments were aiding the breakaway republics who still had Russian nationalism, that they were attempting to play out.
Yeah, that was loony. Yeah, Richie Neal, we love talking to you. You always make us all think, and certainly you are one of the most articulate guys that I know, and I appreciate your being on with us. Next time we want to come back, I want to talk about something removed from the Mideast and Russia, and that's state politics in Massachusetts.
Thanks, Alan, very much.